believing. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fight beside of me. Yeah, walking on the fight beside of me. Running down the wheel line, I'm fighting in the fog and dying tea. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fight beside me. Just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fight beside of me. Yeah, walking on the fight beside of me. Running down. If you don't love it, leave it. This song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fight beside me. Yeah, walking on the fight beside me. Running down with life, I'm fighting in the fog and dying tea. If you don't love it, leave it.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fight inside of me. And that's the name of this program here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Well, lots more news and views for our people. And of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia, New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. Well, as I said, lots more news and views for our people. And let's just see what what we've got here. Oh, yes. Wow. If it weren't for the tremendous media power of Jews in Canada, I think there would be a lot more seriously disliked. Because they, their official lobby groups, including the wildly misnamed League for Human Rights of B'nai B'rith, they have very little to do with human rights, a special place for Jews, but certainly not human rights. But anyway, they seem to be frequently throwing their weight around to the detriment of other people in society. Now, I'm no great fan of Muslims. I'm no great fan of them in Canada. Those in Canada have the same right to meet as anybody else. Well, you would think so. But now, at least one group of Muslims is coming into much the same sort of problem, running into much the same sort of problem that many nationalists have. And that is, if they have a gathering and the Jewish lobby finds out about it, they go out of their way to try to prevent these people from having a meeting. Which would appear, and holding a meeting, or in this case, a religious ceremony, would seem to be their basic human right. Here's the story. Group won't rent hall to imam over alleged remarks. Yes, you know, in this country, you're too often punished for what is alleged. An Edmonton community group will no longer rent its hall to
to an imam, that's like a Muslim priest, who a Jewish organization alleges used it to make anti-Semitic remarks. Well, that used to be considered free speech. You may not agree with it. You don't have to agree with it. But that used to be something that was allowed. You have the right to say things that I might not agree with. Well, that's not the case. Well, at least if you say things that the Jewish community, or Jewish lobby groups think that you should not say. Sheikh Shaban Sharif Mahdi rented the Killarney Community League Hall for Friday prayers. The arrangement ended in July after B'nai B'rith was tipped off to YouTube videos featuring Mahdi. In one, Mahdi allegedly says international Zionism is behind terrorism. Okay, well, that's, you know, that's a debatable point. It may be false. Certainly, there's reason to believe that Israel has a lot to do with ISIS. ISIS, for all its ferociousness, doesn't attack Israel, which is right next door to areas in which ISIS does or has had considerable territory and power. For instance, Syria and Iraq. And this has often been noted with a big question mark. Why do these militant Sunni extremists not attack the country that their ideology would say is a major problem in the Middle East? Why, for instance, apparently has their leader al-Baghdadi been accepted in Israel to be patched up on one occasion? You know, if he's the great terrorist and ISIS and all that. For complicated reasons that I'm not going to go into tonight, it's widely believed that Israel is behind ISIS as a way to divide the Arab world and to destabilize places like Iraq and Syria. Anyway, it's an opinion. Is it absolutely accurate? True? I mean, I don't know. But A. Breath complained to the police, quote, "It's very disturbing to us to have anyone disseminating harmful and hostile views like this," said B'nai B'rith spokesman Aidan Fishman. However, Mahdi's son said critics are misinterpreting the videos and that his father does not promote hatred. "There's no hate from us. We don't hate Jews. We don't hate Christians," he said. Well, in this case, it's very hard to know who's telling the truth. And I would argue it doesn't really matter. They should have the same right to express themselves. But in the world of B'nai B'rith, there really is only one permitted opinion. Let me put it a little differently. You're not permitted to question or to criticize Jews or Israel, as the case might be. Have some very, very interesting material. You've all probably seen the actor Richard Gere. He's a Hollywood millionaire, and he's working with a Soros-funded NGO, that's non-governmental organization, called Open Arms, to bully Italy into taking more illegals. Italian leader vice premier, I guess it is, Salvini, called this a political provocation and accused the NGO of human trafficking. And the person, Amy Mack, who published, put this up on Twitter, made the rather interesting observation. Why isn't Richard Gere
housing and feeding these migrants or illegals? I mean, why is he trying to force them into Europe? Here's some of the commentary on Twitter about this. Dana Abramovich writes, "Why don't Geer, Soros, Gates, Bezos, and other fake benefactors focus on making Africa livable instead of pressuring European countries to accommodate the endless stream of war and economic refugees?" Ulysses writes, "Shadow government controls the herd through its government policymakers, through tell-lie vision. I like that, tell-lie vision. Hollywood celebrities, sports heroes, etc. Shadow government does not want to lose the control over you without a fight. They'd rather kill you and start over with a new generation." And Ron Werner, commenting on the picture published by Amy Mack of Richard Geer with some of the fairly robust-looking young men on this boat full of illegals, comments, "Again, no women or children, just young men. With all these men in Europe, who's left behind to build their country?" And see, a very good question. Alyssa Prince writes, "I agree with Salvini." Deborah 842 writes, "Maybe Richard Geer has spare rooms in his own home." Brandon Roop writes, "Does he, that's Richard Geer, have Italian citizenship? Having an opinion on this is one thing. Pushing it on a country not your own is another thing." Mimi Cat asks a somewhat similar question as Deborah. Mimi Cat says, "How come Met refugees are only young men, no women and children?" Rye Hedge says, "He's so concerned about hungry and marginalized people, maybe he should start in Los Angeles. Plenty of homeless to go around. But then again, those are U.S. citizens, so they get passed over." He's from Hollywood. Has he not seen Dr. Zhivago, where the homeowners are forced to take the other citizens to live in every room possible? I find a lot of very good sense on a lot of people are speaking up, and more power to them. And I think this is something that if you are on Twitter, get into the argument, speak up, and this hypocrisy of this fellow. Actually not play the item or try to.
Middle of the ocean. One of the boats was turned back to take it above a Libyan baby. We don't know what happened to them. Two boats that were rescued here, probably all hands on board have been lost. So the people that you see here on this boat, they're only here because of the donations to Open Arms, to the work that Open Arms does. Now, the most important thing for these people here is to a free port,
to
be able to get off the boat.
So Richard Geer is just going on to trying to guilt, I guess guilt, the Italian government into allowing these illegals in. I don't think that's going to move the Italian government, thank heavens. Here's another very interesting item, it's being published on the in the Twitter sphere, and I first was clued into it by Dr. James Sanchez of Seattle, and I commented on this item, "Karma's a bitch." Anyway, here's the story. It's pathetic. This fellow, is a father of five, and you see him with a pretty blonde wife, himself, three blonde, very pretty children, one Negro boy in arms, and no, actually two Negro boys, one in his arms, one in her arms. I assume they're adoptees. Already, yeah, you're getting a bad feeling. Father of five who advocated rights for migrants, that's illegals, is hit and killed by an illegal immigrant. And that's why I commented to Dr. James Sanchez, karma's a bitch. Killer was scheduled for deportation. Only misdemeanor charges were filed. They adopted two African males to keep their three daughters company. Widow still wants donations for immigrants. I mean, I won't use the F word, but I mean, this woman is effing hopeless. So they adopt two Negro males as company for their three gorgeous blonde daughters. I mean, in my opinion, these poor little girls are just sex bait when these Negro boys grow up. And the boys, well, I'm bad on children's ages, but they're pretty close in age to the little girls. That it's, you know, degenerate doesn't even quite catch it. A staunch supporter of the rights of immigrants and a married father of five, he was killed when an illegal immigrant from El Salvador, facing deportation, crashed into his motorcycle in Colorado. We have just suddenly lost this story. Oh my gosh. Anyway, I think you get the gist. I will try to find it again here. Anyway, you sort of get the gist of the story. Oh, yeah, here we are. The illegal from El Salvador, Valiente, an undocumented immigrant who was slated for deportation 8 months earlier, was charged with misdemeanor careless driving with a revoked license in the deadly accident. He made national headlines in January when he sought sanctuary at the All Souls Unitarian Universalist Church in to avoid deportation to El Salvador during the federal government's shutdown. I mean, talk about a criminal loser. Valiente, he's the illegal. He was charged in this particular incident with misdemeanor careless driving with a revoked license in the deadly accident. Not surprising. He's illegally in the United States. And some people would argue, oh, well, you know, he didn't have any other choice. And, you know, that's the only time he'll break the law. Think again, bozo. Think again. He also drives his driving with a revoked license. Not surprising. You know, you come to another country illegally, you're a lawbreaker. You don't suddenly become good. The Buchanans have five children: daughters Jaslyn, 15, Malia, 12, and Bella, 10, and two sons they adopted from Burundi: 8-year-old Mitchla and 6-year-old Divin. I quite frankly think that those three little girls, even though they're a little bit older than the Negro boys, are going to be sex bait. The Buchanan, in a Facebook status update announcing a celebration of life service for her late husband, who was actually dead, his wife Kathy asked people to donate to Casa de Paz, that's a peace house, an organization in Aurora, Colorado, that provides shelter, meals, access to phones, and transportation to families separated by immigrant detention. Well, hate to say this, you know, some people are just too stupid to live. And here's a meme I posted. It's not original with me, but it has a Negro father talking to his son. And the son asks, Dad, if socialism doesn't work, why do so many people support it? And the father says to the son, because they don't work either, son. there's a bit of wisdom there. Well, I'm not prone to saying a lot of good things about the 20 years or 20 something or people running for the Democratic nomination for president. But there is one, and she's from Hawaii, who has said some good things, and this is Tulsi Gabbard. And she is arguing something that I've certainly argued and I think established on a number of occasions before, and that is that Google is biased, and biased against on the basis of ideology.
On the night after the first Democratic debates, Tulsi Gabbard was the single most Google-searched candidate by far. A perfect opportunity for the candidates to raise crucial donations and climb up in polls in order to qualify for the next debates. But that would be too easy in the heat of Tulsi's massive surge in popularity. Google suspended her advertising account for 6 hours and so drastically limited her ability to direct newcomers to her campaign website. Tulsi is asking for $50 million to compensate for damages. Google's response? They have an algorithm and it is unbiased. The classic argument goes that the machine learning algorithms are mathematical and by their very nature, neutral and unbiased. But this unchecked theoretical view of engineers in Silicon Valley crumbles in reality. In our reality, algorithms reinforce biases they learn about from their training data. The new invisible hand of the modern discourse are the machine learning algorithms that are used by tech companies to recommend shopping items, organize social media feeds, or personalize search results. These algorithms start off with a small set of very simple instructions, and programmers then feed them pools of data to learn from on their own. Machine learning algorithms are good at navigating complexity much more efficiently than humans. They can quickly skim through large databases and prioritize certain values over the others. Today, algorithms are increasingly more often entrusted with critical decision-making, including court sentencing, granting loans and benefits, and even hiring for jobs and academic placements. But there is a catch. Much of the development and implementation of algorithms happens in secret. Their formulas are proprietary, and users rarely get to even know the variables that make up their equations. Oftentimes, machine learning algorithms make decisions that not even their developers can understand why and how they arrive to them, and yet, they just seem to work. But mathematics cannot solve everything. The result of machine learning algorithms is solipsistic homogeneity, a process of finding associations, grouping data into categories, and creating structures of sameness. The training data is always paramount to any algorithm. If social or political biases exist within that data, the algorithm is most likely going to incorporate them. Oftentimes, it's the historical data that carry negative social footprint into the automation. In 2018, Amazon was looking for a way to automate its hiring system. To recruit new engineers more quickly, a dedicated artificial intelligence tool was developed. The system would scan through past resumes and search for the best candidates on the web. But because the historical data showed predominantly male resumes, the AI learned men are preferred to women. The algorithm automatically downgraded all CVs with the term women's or candidates attending women-only schools. When Amazon learned about this, they tried to repair the algorithm, but soon they found out no matter what they did, it would always find new forms of bias. So they decided to kill the algorithm and return to traditional hiring methods. Similar to Amazon's hiring AI, Google's advertising algorithm also mirrored cultural biases of historical data. A study found that the system shows ads for high-income jobs to men disproportionately more often than it does to women. In other cases, users can attempt to feed the algorithm with biased information and manipulate its outcome. Not so long ago, Google Search auto-suggest feature used to rely heavily on user input data. Until users learned how to easily game the system to manipulate its rankings or just to troll the search engine with a cesspool of bigotry. So Google made a decision to drastically interfere with its search algorithm, removing entire dictionaries of non-advertiser-friendly terms. Artificial intelligence is also used to predict criminal behavior that judges rely on to determine their sentencing. But not even this realm is immune to algorithmic biases. One such widely used algorithm flagged African-Americans as higher risk, although they did not reoffend twice as much as white Americans. Similarly, white Americans were labeled lower risk, but did reoffend twice as much as African-Americans. Machine learning algorithms are still very weak at understanding nuances of human language. Under the pressure from advertisers, YouTube cracked down on extremist content by automatically flagging and demonetizing videos containing a whole vocabulary of keywords. But the algorithm is not capable of differentiating between content that is truly extremist and one that is educational or merely reporting on it. YouTube's workaround was to give mainstream media an exclusive pass, automatically alienating independent creators and journalists in the process. The success of machine learning algorithms stands and falls on the availability of good data. The catch is, there will always be less information about minorities, which will always lead to higher likelihood of invalid statistical patterns about minorities. Perfect manifestation of this reality is Amazon's facial recognition tool that misidentified women from men 19% of the time and brown and black women from men up to 1/3 of the time. Not always is it the algorithm that should be blamed for all the bias. Sometimes, corporate or organizational interests of its creators can hugely interfere with this delivery. As Google grew to become a dominant search engine worldwide, it slowly began offering more and more services that directly competed with the market of providers that relied on Google Search to reach their customers. When the company launched Google Finance, it began prioritizing it over the organic search results for relevant keywords, even though Yahoo Finance claimed the title of being most popular among users. This practice then expanded to Google Health, Google Reviews, Maps, Video, Travel and Bookings, and Email. Prioritizing its own products allowed Google to steal up to 34% of the search traffic. Now the percentage is even higher, as Google Search offers Instant Answers feature and a wider range of Google products that make users stay on Google longer and thus generate more ad revenue for the company. This isn't a critique of whether Google should be allowed to push its own products as a private company. Rather, it's to show yet another vector for bias to sneak into the algorithm and show that its search engine is not as neutral as Google would have you believe. Corporate bias is a powerful factor, and corporate bias is especially important to political insiders. Longtime Google executive Eric Schmidt has been working hand-in-hand with the Democratic Party, both with Obama and Hillary Clinton campaigns. There was a lot of effort from Google insiders trying to get Hillary Clinton elected. This included implementing features that would push Latino vote in key states or investing in startups and groups that would support Clinton campaign with technology, data, and advertising. Tulsi Gabbard probably doesn't enjoy the same level of insider connection with one of the most influential tech companies in the world. But whether the temporary suspension of her account in a critical moment was just an error of the algorithm or was intentional is a speculation at this point. Had Tulsi had people on her side at Google headquarters, this suspension might have never taken place or would have been much shorter. Google is refusing to give answers to crucial questions. What variables triggered the automated system to suspend her account? Was it flagged by the algorithm and then suspended manually? Or was the decision made by the algorithm alone? What unusual activity led to the algorithm flagging Tulsi's ads account? spending significantly more on ads on Google after she became the most searched candidate could only be expected as the most rational move a presidential candidate could make. Definitely not an unusual activity. Everybody's strategy would be to capitalize on the search traffic. It's very difficult to understand the reasoning behind suspending her account under these circumstances. The practice of unaccountable moderation is an industry standard across all major social media platforms. Routine censorship raids on social media gave the right the argument to accuse Silicon Valley of liberal bias. Whatever the case is, the presence of bias is undeniable. Algorithms are mathematical, but they can only learn from people. A good step forward would be to admit that bias exists and open up the source code of the machine learning algorithms so that we can study these biases in real time as they arise. Secret development of artificial intelligence by unaccountable tech corporations is a recipe for dystopian control of the information flow and monopolization of internet markets. Tulsi Gabbard learned this the hard way.
A very interesting commentary. Marion Le Pen is the, I believe, the granddaughter of the great founder and longtime leader until a few years ago of the Front National, the patriotic anti-immigrant populist National Front in France, and she's a member of the National Assembly. And a member of the Front National, and a very up-and-coming star. And this this is a photo of her, and something she said. Every star in the European Union flag represents the death of a nation. She says, the European Union is not Europe. It's an ideology without land, without people, without roots, without soul, and without civilization. The European Union is slowly killing millennial nations. That actually has nothing to do with the group of people sometimes called millennials. It has everything to do with nations that have been there for 1,000 years. He's a candidate for U.S. Congress. His name is Matt Gaetz. And he sends out this email. Did you see this reporting from Tucker Carlson the other night on Fox? If you missed it, you won't believe what you're about to hear. The socialist left in this country is so out of touch with real Americans. The crazy thing is, this is what the socialist Democrats want America to look like. Take a look at some of their convention rules. And I was taken out to lunch today by a good supporter, and he mentioned this, and I had to shake my head. I couldn't believe it. But here are some of the rules for the Democratic Convention. No clapping, no talking, specifically no talking to cops or people wearing MAGA hats. No speaking to anyone without credentials. No aggressive sense in the silent room. Try to be chill. Breathe. No whispering or chattering to comrades. Only the oppressed are allowed to address the group, denoted by gender and skin color. I'm not sure if the Democratic Socialist presidential candidates are aware of these rules, but if this is part of what they plan to implement, should they be elected to office, the American people should be extremely worried. That's exactly what's at stake in 2020, keeping America great or totally or a total left-wing lunacy. We need to stop this lunacy now. The only way we can stop it is to re-elect our great president and vote for real Republicans, not rhinos. That's rhino, R-I-N-O, in short form for Republicans in name only. I'm going to play that Tucker Carlson news story. It's so bizarre. You actually have to hear it to believe it.
The Democratic Socialists of America held their annual convention in Atlanta over the weekend, as you might expect from a socialist event. There were hints of totalitarianism from the very beginning. Upon arrival, socialists were given the rules: no clapping, no talking to cops, and no aggressive sense First of all, in this room, I see that no one's clapping for me. It could be because I'm not engaging, but it also is because everyone's doing this. And that's really important, because those loud bursts of noise, even though this is a noisy space, when we can do something like reducing that, that's really important. So please don't clap, shoot up these. You have to have your credentials at all time. We're not trying to be jerks, but...
No, what he says, you've got to do this. It's you hold up both hands, and it looks like you shake your hands a little bit or wiggle your fingers. I mean, good God, what freakery. And I think in my introduction, I may have left the impression that these are the rules for the Democratic Convention. This is actually the Democratic Socialist Convention, which includes people, of course, like Octavio Cortez. Anyway, this person running his mouth is the chair thingy at the convention.
There are right-wing infiltrators who are trying to get in here. Don't really talk to anybody who doesn't have a credential. Don't talk to cops. Don't talk to MAGA.
MAGA assholes.
There's also in Piedmont 8, a completely quiet room. One thing to note there, please don't go into that space with anything that's like an aggressive scent, for instance, right? Try to be chill, right? Take a deep breath. Don't feel better before you say anything. So at a traditional socialist convention, comrades would applaud Stalin, for example, for half an hour. But at the DSA convention, they were obediently silent.
Could you all give one more round of ASL applause for our fantastic speakers? We are so lucky to have you in the socialist movement.
But for some, the silence wasn't enough. When the floor was open for comments, the complaints began to roll in. Watch this.
Quick point of privilege. Quick point of personal privilege. Yes. First of all, James Jackson, Sacramento, he, him. I just want to say, can we please keep the chatter to a minimum? I'm one of the people who's very, very prone to sensory overload. There's a lot of whispering and chatter going on. It's making it very difficult for me to focus. Please, can we just, I know we're all fresh and ready to go, but can we please just keep the chatter to a minimum? It's affecting my ability to focus. Thank you.
Thank you, comrade. Okay, is there a speaker against name, chapter, pronoun?
Point of personal privilege?
Yes.
Please do not use gendered language to address everyone.
No gendered language! The guy, or person we should say, complaining about sensory overload was a guy called James Jackson. He's a self-described socialist from Sacramento. Jackson was complaining about the noise. It was something of a theme for the weekend.
I've already asked people to be mindful of the chatter of their comrades who are sensitive to sensory overload, and that goes double for the heckling and the hissing. It is also triggering to my anxiety. Like, the be comradely isn't just for, like, you know, let's keep things civil or whatever. It's so that people aren't going to get triggered and so that it doesn't affect their performance as a delegate.
So it used to be when the proletariat gathered for a convention, they talked about how to liberate the proletariat. But now they talk about triggering James's anxiety. Things have changed a lot. We'll have more of that video in just a moment. But first tonight, Angela Nagel is the author of the book Kill All Normies, Online Culture Wars from 4chan and Tumblr to Trump and the Alt-Right. She is a keen observer of the political left, a member of it, in fact, and she joins us. Angela, thanks very much for coming on.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So I want to be fair. And I, you know, obviously there are freaks at every kind of political event, and I don't think that James Jackson from Sacramento is every Democratic Socialist. But I'm wondering, how influential is this group on the left right now? Is it worth paying attention to what they say at their convention?
Definitely. I mean, cranks have always been around on the left. I mean, Orwell wrote about this a long time ago. But the difference here, I suppose, is that the DSA was a relatively small organization. Its original founding had, Michael Harrington was one of the founders, had roots in actually the Catholic Workers Movement. So it's changed a lot just in the last 2 years. And there was a huge influx of people kind of after the 2016 elections. And part of the DSA's the kind of idea of the DSA, I guess, is that they do want to influence the Democratic Party. They want to be a kind of an external left wing, if you like, of the Democratic Party. And you can see how they have influenced its ideas. And many of their economic ideas are ones that I totally support and are actually very popular. Medicare for all, a wealth tax, and so on. And actually, if they would just stick to those economic issues, they would kind of have this in the bag, because they have a whole set now of issues that the public has moved to the left on economics. The problem is that they have to wrap it in this stuff that you've just seen, to the point where for example, if I tried to join the DSA, I'm sure they would just screech me out of the place. I wouldn't be able to, you know. And I know so many people who have left who were members before this influx happened. They had this culture of like purging everyone, but this is something that seems to happen to every campaign on the left and every organization on the left.
I would think what's so baffling is, so they're social, a democratic socialist, so they kind of non-totalitarian. So you would think that their main concern would be the plight of working people who really are in trouble in America. Look at the suicide rate. We talked about it in the open. Mm-hmm. And yet when they get up there, it seems like a bunch of rich kids almost in therapy whining about their triggers and their anxieties and their gender. Like, who cares? What? These don't seem like people who are concerned about America's working class to me.
Yeah, and I watched some of the full clip, and they were talking a lot about their invisible disabilities, which is very convenient because, of course, you can't say that they don't have one. You just have to allow them to shout at you. And, you know, the only invisible disability they have is, like, bourgeois narcissism.
Bourgeois narcissism is, I don't think if I spent a year trying to think of a better description, I could come up with anything more precise than that. Can you just savor for 20 seconds the irony of a group of democratic socialists besought with bourgeois narcissism?
I know, but I'm sure for people on the right this is hilarious and it's probably gold, but for me, I mean, I just find it just unbearably sad, because I've seen this happen over and over again in countless political parties, campaigns. It seems to be almost impossible for good people within the organization to stand up to these people and stop it happening. And now it's too late. I mean, could you honestly, could any normal person sit in that room? I don't think so.
No. Could any normal person sit in that room? No. Angela Negative, great to see you tonight. Thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah, very good report by Tucker Carlson. And this is the Democratic Socialist Party, to which Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez belongs, and the absolutely cloying restrictions on sense, clapping, referring to a person's gender. These people are almost certifiably nuts. Well, I'm going to take my musical break right now, and here are some some Ulster Scots folk tunes. A little bit different from my usual fare. Hope you like it. A lot of these tunes were brought over to North America by the founding settler people who settled much of, especially in the United States, much of Appalachia. And we'll try that. Thank you.
cause they heard me shout. My Aunt Jane, she took me in and gave me tea at her big tent.
And you wonder
why I am so proud.
You wonder why I sing so loud.
My Aunt Jane, she says to me, no matter where you're going to be, we are people true and proud. So sing with pride and sing aloud.
Northern Ireland! Northern Ireland!
There are sailor boys on the seven seas.
Those are some Ulster folk songs. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the Fighting Side of Me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Back with you again tomorrow, same time, midnight Eastern Time. The show is repeated at 8 in the morning and 4 in the afternoon. All of those are Eastern Standard Time. And I'll sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the Fighting Side of Me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com.
In days of yore, from Britain's shore, Wolfe the dauntless hero came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave our boast, our pride, and joined in love together, the thistle, shamrock, rose, and twine, the maple leaf forever. The side for freedom, homes and loved ones dear firmly stood and nobly died. And those dear rights which they maintained, we swear to yield them never. Our watchword evermore shall be the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our Queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. Dominion now extends from Cape Race to Nootka Sound. May peace forever be our lot and plenteous store abound. And may those ties of love be ours which discord cannot sever, and flourish green o'er freedom's home, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever.